All right, you're listening to another episode of the Martinez Perspective, back here on Thursday with my recurring guest, Jared Howe, from the So to Speak podcast. How you doing, Jared?
Not bad. How you doing, big guy?
Just following all the crazy shit going on, this World War III, apparently. This is the latest news. We're headed into a global nuclear conflict. We have, Putin and Lavrov hinting at nuclear war and put the nukes on ready. And, you know, everybody needs to pick a side and join a team. And you have the alternative media picking their side, which is obviously just this contrarian reaction to whatever they think is the mainstream side. It seems that the dumbing down of the alt media, it's like the alt media and the mainstream media, they're kind of two sides of the same coin now. It's like the mainstream media has their narrative and try to polarize people towards one position. And then the alt media is really just a reactive thing. It's just taking the opposite position of whatever CNN says or whatever Biden says and not actually analyzing it or having any nuance. It's just like pure reaction. And they end up falling into all kinds of stupid traps by doing that. And there's no analysis going on.
Well, don't you think that the media is aware of its own unpopularity? Don't you think it's aware of the fact that people use it as a counter indicator of what's actually true? So once you become aware of this fact, it's like, what can you, you know, what becomes possible in terms of what you can get away with for coverage? You can put a little bit of truth in here, an untruth there. You kind of mislead people. It's like the equivalent of putting 10 locks on your door and only locking six of them at any given time. A burglar has no idea which one they're locking or unlocking. And so same idea here. They as what's Bannon call it, they flood the zone with bullshit. They flood the zone with just too much shit to even try to take in. Some of it's true, some of it's not. You see them champion drag queen story hour and you're like, obviously that's evil, right? You see them defending human trafficking and calling it mass migration, calling it asylum seeking, and you know that's obviously evil. But then they'll turn around and they'll say something like, oh well, I support Ukraine, I support Ukraine not being invaded by Russia, which that you would think any white country not being invaded by another white country would be just like an obvious common sense stance. But because Democrats and neocons take the stance one time, they finally found a war they didn't want. Well, it's not even that they don't like the war. It's that they didn't like the pretense by which it was started. So they finally do this one time and we're supposed to just reflexively take the opposite position.
Because they don't want the war, we must want the war. So you notice that this whole anti-war, like alt media, now they love war. So you notice how they can just fucking gaslight you into being pro-war and to supporting the deaths of white people, so long as it's not the hated, you know, NATO or the hated America doing the war. As soon as it's some other power, as soon as it's China or Russia, maybe Israel doing a war, then it's a good war. Then it's a war of liberation. Then it's a war of, you know, tearing down the New World Order. I've seen these Q-tards pick this up. They're saying this shit, and they've been saying this for a while. I covered this yesterday in my stream, is that these Q-tards, once Trump lost the election, they just replaced him with Putin and Xi Jinping as the new savior. Fucking Fuentes did this. That Darren Beatty clown, he's been doing that. These Q-tards on BitChute go on their videos, are like, Putin and Xi Jinping are going to take down the globalist cabal. And actually, they're trying to spin the Ukraine invasion as like some kind of move by Putin to expose Joe Biden. He's going to take down this Ukraine government and like expose the deep state ties to Biden in Ukraine. And like, you see how they're just, everybody's using this fucking conflict to just push their own little narrative, their own meta narrative, you know? So Bannon is still harping about Biden and Biden's links to Ukraine. He's just using this to justify that narrative. And then everybody's just using it for their own fucking agenda, basically.
And they're using this false dichotomy too. So it's either either you support what Russia is doing in Ukraine, or you're supporting George Soros funding human trafficking and child rape. Like, that's the only two options here. You couldn't just be interested in not having white people fight a war against each other. You couldn't just be interested in having a group of white people want, you know, self-determination and sovereignty. If that's what they want, if they don't want to share a political system with, you know, Russia, then why should they be forced into it? I'm American. You know what I mean? I come from America. Like, I'm sorry, I thought this was America. But no, you know what I mean? It's like America, the idea of that's based on being able to have self-determination from England. And like the analog in my mind, it would be like if someone was trying to force America to be part of the United Kingdom again, or 30, Mexico, 50, man. 70 years, or Mexico, after we had achieved independence.
Mexico's so come to liberate understand you, why. Dude.
Yeah, I can understand why Ukrainians would be upset about someone else coming in and asserting like a political authority over them, even if they don't like their government. I don't like the federal government in the United States the vast majority of the time, but that doesn't mean I want some other foreign government that I don't like to come in and invade my shit. Dude, that doesn't make any sense at all. And I wouldn't want white people killing each other from what I'm hearing. And I don't know if it's just war propaganda or not, but from what I'm hearing, they're saying thousands of people have died, a lot of them civilians. Is that a good thing to have all these dead white people? Like, who does that benefit? Right.
Alex,
who's celebrating that as a victory?
Alex Jones, he's pushing. I mean, they're all doing this. I've seen all these alt media channels doing the same thing. It's like you either submit to Russia or George Soros. It's like these are the two avatars, and exactly. These are the only two avatars, and there's no third position, there's no third way, and it's just a lie. It's just a total psyop to shuffle you into one side or the other. Example, Viktor Orban, he's in the EU, he's in NATO, and he's rejected the woke stuff, and he still managed to like play them all off against each other. He still manages to take the money from the EU but reject their migrants and their homo shit. And so it's totally possible there's a movement towards an intermarium in Eastern Europe. And of course, Eastern Europeans, from their perspective, their main threat has always been Russian imperialism. So like, just naturally, they will look for allies in Western Europe. They have to be wary of what those allies might push on them. But it's totally possible to get like weaponry from these countries and not accept, a rainbow dildo that may come attached to it, if that's the case, right? And Alex Jones says, you can have the Russians in there. You have George Soros literally going after your children. Like, George Soros is just a parasite who will just throw his name behind any stupid cause to you. Or it doesn't mean, you know, that there isn't a third path for Ukrainians to pursue that doesn't include George Soros, right? This is just fucking psyoping. And Alex Jones has interviewed Dugin, right? He's been on Dugin's show and Dugin's been on his show, and he's pushing the same false dichotomy of, let me read out this Dugin statement. I'll get your take on it. I said, Dugin says that Europe has today a choice: Eurasianism or Atlanticism. Either you go with Russia or America. If the European New Right chooses us, the barbaric element, therefore, it must adopt our methods of action. You have to organize attacks, deal with sabotage, set fire to and blow up bridges. Real anti-Mondialism is destruction and terror. And what does the New Right do? She turned into an intellectual sect. For 30 years, overweight, gray-haired gentlemen have gathered at seminars to beat the foam. Of course, you have to read books, but that is not enough. You need to create guerrilla. If you're against the New World Order, then take a knife, put on a mask, leave the house in the evening, and kill at least one Yankee. This is why the New Left, Red Brigades, and Rhodey Arm Faction are so close to me. Our task is not limited to culture. Our task is to make real revolution. So what he's saying here is that he uses far right, far left, Muslims, anything he can to throw up against his hated enemy, America. It's not Jews. It's not, you know, rootless cosmopolitan elites. It's not cultural Marxists. It's Yankees. It's your average American. He wants to kill them, and he wants the New Right to do his bidding. And in many cases, they are, right?
White Americans, Yankee too. Connotations in America typically refers to like a northern, someone who lives in northern United States or northeastern United States. So there's like specific connotations to this term. It doesn't sound like a pro-white thing to me at all. So rallying behind this guy under the pretext that he's somehow pro-white or nationalistic is ridiculous. But you see what he's doing here too, is he's setting up this dichotomy. Either you side with the United States and the European Union, you know, this NATO-based world order, the Atlanticist order, as he calls it, or you side with Eurasia. There's no third option. It's one of these civilization states that you have to side with. There's no political autonomy. There's no reality in which your country just exists without being part of a polypolar union with other countries. And so I've been saying that regardless of whether Putin is successful in making Ukraine part of Russia during this military adventure that he's on right here, it's still going to be a success from the perspective of globalists, because Ukraine's borders will have been eroded either way. Ukraine now applying for membership in the European Union, which will probably come with lots of strings attached, like the requirement that they accept migrants into their country. And so from the perspective of globalists who want to transcend the political borders of existing countries, this is going to be a win regardless of whether Ukraine becomes part of the EU or whether it's absorbed into a Eurasian union with right, Belarus and Russia. Yeah. Heads they win, tails you lose.
Yeah, it's Eastern globalism. It's erase the unique identities of Eastern Europe. That has always been the goal of Dugin and Putin. Putin ultimately is following this Duginite thinking that Russia needs to, at the very least, control or have sway over all of these Eastern European territories. And any assertion of identity, any assertion of nationalism in these areas is bad for his vision of Eurasian empire. And so it's like, yeah, this is the Duginite methodology. It's just like, there's two options. You have to pick one, and anyone who proposes some kind of third alternative to that has to just be dismissed or ignored. But there are alternatives. Absolutely. There are even within the EU, it's like, it's kind of a dichotomy in and of itself that like the EU, being in the EU makes you subservient to this agenda, right? Because you have Eastern European countries that are in the EU, like Poland, Czech, Slovakia, Hungary, that have not succumbed to the top-down agendas of the EU. They've rejected the woke stuff. They've rejected the migrants, even the quotas that were put on them. The EU itself cannot set the internal border policies of these countries. The immigration laws are set by the local governments, but what the EU can do is just assign a quota of migrants. So if the EU decides we're taking in 100,000 migrants in 2022, it can then assign certain numbers of migrants to certain countries. But even that hasn't succeeded. Even that has been rejected by Poland and Hungary. So you can totally operate in that framework. There's consequences to rebelling against it, and maybe not being in the EU is actually probably better for many of these countries. I'm not for the EU. I'm kind of, you know, it's just one of these things that exist, and people are, you know, people are inclined to get in it to get the money and the benefits and the Schengen zone and all that. But there obviously is negative elements to it. But then you have countries not in the EU, like the UK and Switzerland and Norway, and they have bad immigration policies themselves. Russia has bad immigration policy. America's not in the fucking EU. So
I found out the other day that Russia has, I think, birthright citizenship under some circumstances, because Edward Snowden's hiding out there, and he apparently applied for citizenship on grounds that his child, that I didn't even know he had, is a Russian citizen by birthright. So I'm like, oh, I thought Russia was just far more ethnocentric and based. I thought that they were ethno-nationalists. They have what, birthright citizenship? Edward Snowden's child can get citizenship by birthright, by virtue of the fact of having been born there? One parent Russian, perhaps? Like, that's, you know, that's not the most based thing in the world. That's not the most ethnocentric thing in the world, right? So this, everything is not as it seems, right? You listen to Putin talk about Russian identity. He calls you a caveman nationalist if you think that, you know, Russia is for Russians. If you have like a Slavic idea of what Russian identity means, then he calls you a caveman nationalist. You need to be more inclusive of other relevant ethnic groups there, Goy, like the Muslims and such. You know what I mean? This is
the Tatars,
the message. Yeah. This is the message that Russian state media is putting out. And I've seen this Cope posting saying how, well, Putin calling for an anti-fascist conference, that's just irony. Putin calling his opponents in Ukraine Nazis, that's just irony. It's like, is it really? I mean, as you've pointed out in the past, you can go right over to RT, go into the search field, type in neo-Nazi, and get hundreds upon hundreds of articles of them defaming nationalists of all flavors from all countries as Nazis just for wanting to protect their own borders. And so, you know, the idea that this is just a tongue-in-cheek, one-off aberration where he's throwing the rhetoric of the West back in their faces, I think it's foundationally fucking ridiculous.
It's a total and absolute cope. And it's debunked by the fact that inside of Russia itself, he's put laws against Holocaust denial, against the glorification of Nazism. That was put into law in 2014. Not only do they have a law against glorifying Nazis, and they have a law against showing Nazi symbols. So even people that would use the swastika in a totally like innocuous sense, they weren't promoting it. They were just like talking about the Third Reich in a book or something, and they'd have the swastika on the cover. They would censor those things in Russia. There recently a teacher got arrested for Holocaust denial. Many Russians have been arrested under these laws and charged. Many white nationalists have been arrested and charged. Tesak was recently killed in a Russian prison. And it's not a LARP. It is absolutely a fundamental part of Putin's ideology. And it links back to this guy called Boris Spiegel, this Jew. He runs this organization called World Without Nazism, says it's a Russian political organization with ties to Vladimir Putin's government, which claims to campaign against neo-fascism. The group has also been described by security agencies from the Baltics as a Russian propaganda organization and a Kremlin-sponsored NGO, which aims to advance Russian foreign policy against formerly Soviet-occupied countries. It says the organization was founded by Boris Spiegel, a Russian oligarch with close ties to Putin. The organization accuses countries that formerly part of the communist bloc of rapid Nazification. It criticizes Western democracies for their alleged role in starting World War II and proposes a common history textbook for all of Europe. It advocates establishment of an international early warning system, monitoring prevention of uprising and spread of Nazi ideas, establishment of international action, judicial bodies to suppress manifestations of neo-Nazism, racism, xenophobia, cooperation with international organizations, parliaments to oversee denazification processes, incorporation of the education system in the Council of Europe member states, obligatory programs of teaching Holocaust and Second World War history, and so on and so on. This guy was close to Putin. He's behind this whole denazification. So when Putin says, I'm here to denazify Ukraine, he's carrying out the will of this Jew, Boris Spiegel. Now, this guy was recently arrested in Russia for bribery. He's, you know, notoriously corrupt and apparently too corrupt for even Putin himself, right? But this is the ideology. It's not fake. It's real.
And I think there's a real connection, actually, between, you know, these former Soviet republics and the accusations of them being Nazis. And it's not necessarily that they're Hitler sympathizers or that they're calling for a Jewish Holocaust, which is the implication when someone over there calls you a Nazi, right? But if you think back to like 1989 to 1991, when some of these former Soviet republics were vying for their independence, they were trying to exercise what was apparently a constitutionally granted right under the Soviet Constitution to secede from the Union if they wanted to. And for a long time, you know, the Soviets were notorious for not letting people leave, neither physically nor politically. And so Ukraine was actually a founding member of the United Nations, and they got the United Nations to affirm their borders in 1991 to affirm their sovereignty. They talk about, oh, well, because these former Soviet nations, when they were protesting in the streets, they were flying swastika flags, when they were vying for their independence from the Soviet Union, they were flying swastika flags. And so they're neo-Nazis. And obviously these groups were supported by the West. It was during the Cold War. Of course, the CIA had involvement. And so it's an American-backed neo-Nazi coup. That's, I'm pretty sure that's as deep as the fucking argument goes. Have you heard otherwise?
Yeah, it seems to be the case where, you know, these alt media people, they're getting their cues from Russia Today. It seems like everything that they say is just a regurgitation of Russia Today talking points. A lot of it's exaggerated. I looked into it at the time. I find a lot of their claims were exaggerated. Like, there's no question that the U.S. and the EU is trying to exert some influence over there, over Ukraine. Like, you had John McCain was over there, and what's her name? That Victoria Nuland, right? They always point to her as proof that the Ukrainian, that 2014 uprising was just a conspiracy, an orchestrated conspiracy by the State Department, right? This is the RT narrative. It's like Nuland, they always throw that call of her on, you know, speaking to some people where she's like talking about the revolution. She talks about the opposition politicians in Ukraine. And then she said, fuck the EU. And that's not really proof of an organized, orchestrated conspiracy, right? Because that shows that there was discord between the EU and the US on the issue, right? The EU was not actually that supportive of those oppositional figures during that uprising. And Nuland was mad about that. She said, fuck the EU. They're not doing what I want them to do. So how is that proof of a conspiracy, right?
I think the level of the degree to which the United States and the EU are cooperating on geopolitics or foreign policy, I think it's wildly exaggerated. I think that the people, the elite in the EU, they're kind of upset with the American-centric order as well, just as upset as Russia or China is. They have the exact same complaints. Even just a few years ago, the president of the European Council was complaining about how, oh, well, we get 20% of 80% of our energy in US dollars. Like, why the outsized influence of American dollars? So even a few years ago, the European Union was talking about getting rid of the dollar as the unit of exchange that they were using. They wanted to diminish its role as world reserve currency and international unit of exchange. This isn't something that just popped up. This is something that, you know, the people in charge in the European Union, in Russia and China, have been working toward for a while. There's plenty of stories out there about Russia and China both de-dollarizing. Donald Trump was putting sanctions on China and India because they were buying non-dollar denominated oil from Iran. It's like, this has been a trend toward de-dollarization for a long time because global economies are getting oversaturated with newly printed money. Inflation is getting out of control. The thing about inflation is that it happens really slowly at first, and then it happens really quickly. And we're getting to the point now where it's accelerating. You can see it. Everybody can fucking see it. And so the globalists, as Alex Jones calls them, they're setting up to pivot toward moving their base of operations to Eurasia. They want to have redundant centers of power in places like China, the European Union, Russia. So we don't want to let this crisis go to waste. Crises call for drastic solutions.
Yeah, it's I think there's definitely some truth to the fact that the U.S. has been using Ukraine or trying to influence Ukraine to take an anti-Russian stance, and it's sort of like these neocon types support that position. But it's also just like they're capitalizing on something that's already there, right? They're capitalizing on a conflict and tensions that have already existed in that territory and region for hundreds of years, and they're simply trying to use it and exacerbate it for their own ends. But I think
the false dichotomy that you talked about, either choose George Soros or choose Russia, it ignores the fact that there are actually some Ukrainian nationalists there with an individuated ethnic identity of their own that would like to have their own country. And it's like, are we just going to ignore what they want?
Yeah, the argument is like, well, they don't, you know, they're not strong enough and not powerful enough. And Putin is, it's, you know, they have
and
all
their
these
president's
folks.
Jewish. Their president's Jewish. Yeah. Therefore, they lose the right to self-determination. It's like, oh, it's not that
right.
Great
of
an
argument. So it's funny. These people want to talk about self-determination for some foreign country. Okay, so their president's Jewish. It's like every fucking Western country has either, you know, a Jewish influence president or just a straight up Jewish president. So it's like, so Boris Johnson is, you know, one of these stooges. So then I guess the English people don't have a right to self-determination and they should just be bombed to oblivion. What I was saying about Ukraine is that it's like there's these two bad sides. The U.S. getting too in bed with the U.S. comes with negative strings attached, but getting too in bed with Russia comes with negative strings attached as well. There is a third way. These people want to ignore it, though. Yeah, they try to discredit any kind of Ukrainian nationalist groups and sentiment, right? Like the Azov Battalion, they try to discredit them and say, oh, they're just puppets of the neocons or something like that. It's like, if it was truly like this organized orchestrated conspiracy, I don't buy that, because if that were true, why is it that Ukraine is not in NATO? Why is it Ukraine is not in the EU? It's they've had like, what, 7 or 8 years to bring them into those organizations, and they still haven't done it. Even Joe Biden said Ukraine won't be in NATO for at least 10 years. So why is it this that they use this as an excuse to invade Ukraine, that like they're buddying up to NATO or whatever? But well, it was stated on record that they won't even enter NATO for a very long time. So what is he so fucking mad about it?
I know. Well, even if they were in NATO, like, why would that mean that America were to bear the blame for everything that happens in Ukraine? Like, you notice this pattern of behavior, right, where America is blamed for 100% of what NATO does, as though the majority of Americans even support NATO. Like, we want to be defending European borders or African borders or Middle Eastern borders instead of our own. Like, a lot of Americans, I think, feel frustrated with NATO. We feel like we're at the mercy of these institutions that are beyond the control of our political processes. We have no means by which to affect the policies of organizations like NATO. And so we're just as much at their mercy as anybody else. And like, the idea that we are somehow ethically responsible for what NATO does as a country, America, is, I think, ridiculous. These internationalists have held America hostage, just like they've held the European Union hostage, just like they've held Russia hostage. And yeah, I would say that they're still holding Russia hostage because they haven't seen a compelling argument for how they lost power when the Soviet Union was forced to concede that it didn't have the resources to exercise political authority, excuse me, over former Soviet republics. Like, I don't, what magic process resulted in communists and Jews just losing power in Russia? A former KGB guy ended up being the most powerful person there, and his mother's Jewish. You know, he has ties to the Jews. Raised by them during childhood. So, like, what is the argument for how Russia has transcended its Jewish communist influence? I haven't seen it.
Yeah, it's a very like one-sided argument on either side. It's like from the Russian and alt media side, it's just like this idea of NATO expansion, right? This is NATO aggression, NATO expansion. And it's like those countries in Eastern Europe themselves asked to join NATO, right? They're the ones that want to join NATO. It wasn't like NATO forcing them to get into NATO. It was them petitioning to get into NATO because they feared a Russian resurgence, right? Because after the Soviet Union collapsed, those countries gained independence. And in order to like secure some kind of deterrent against reconquest of those lands, they naturally lined up with NATO to get this deterrent. And so you have like Estonia join NATO, and you can see the nationalists in Estonia. There's this one guy who attended the American Renaissance Conference numerous times. His name is Ruben Kalip. And he's against Russia too, because he sees them as a much greater threat to his sovereignty as an Estonian nationalist than these other powers, right? And so it is like a fucking rock and a hard place situation. It's like the EU comes with bad ramifications, but so does Russia. Russia doesn't even recognize their ethnicities at all, right? Wants to absorb them into this globalistic Eurasian Union. So how is it that these alt media gimps are like dismissing the concerns of these Eastern Europeans and blaming everything on NATO expansion, when it's like there's a long history here of Russia moving into these territories and trying to undermine their nationalism because it doesn't suit this Eurasian agenda?
Well, and their argument's not a very good one either, because if membership in NATO means you have no right to defend your own national borders, then that means most white countries don't have the right to defend their own borders. By their argument, it would be totally justified for any white country to invade any other white country by virtue of the fact that they're NATO members. And then also, I mean, this argument that, well, Putin has a right to do this because he made it very clear what his line in the sand was going to be. He had a red line, and he made it very clear what that red line was. Even Henry Kissinger warned us about what his red line was back in the 90s. The top geopolitical experts on the Soviet Union warned us about this back in the 90s, as points out the New York Times and the Washington Post. And so we have nobody to blame but America. He made his red line clear, and it's like, well, making a red line in Ukraine, a country you don't control, it's like, where do you get the authority to exercise property rights in countries that aren't yours? You know, if Ukraine wants to join NATO, that doesn't give you a right to ignore Ukraine's borders. If it did, then, like I said, any country that's a member of NATO, like the United States or Canada or half of fucking Europe, it would be justified to invade them. And then the other problem is, well, if you don't, if your issue is that you don't want to have NATO on your borders, invading Ukraine and annexing it and making it part of Russia puts you that much closer to NATO member countries. So it's like, yeah, none of the arguments for it make sense at all.
Yeah, he's just moving his border closer to NATO. Now he will share a border with a NATO member. He already technically does. Poland shares a border with Belarus, which is a satellite state of Russia. Now Finland and Sweden are looking to get into NATO because of this invasion. So he's really just pushing all these countries deeper into the hands of NATO by doing this. This is going to backfire on him in the long run.
And then all of this geopolitical analysis is also based on the Monroe Doctrine anyway, which is kind of antiquated, because you don't need to just worry about attacks from within the same hemisphere in the post-Cold War era. It's widely taken for granted that the United States and Russia have the ability to initiate mutually assured destruction, total destruction, within just minutes without even having to resort to land bases. They can launch from jets. They can launch from submarines. Look at a fucking map sometime. You know how easy it is to get from the Atlantic Ocean into the Arctic Ocean and get right up on the Russian coast? Russia and the United States could put craft on each other's borders within minutes, probably, and neither would be able to do anything about it. So the idea that physical proximity is like a primary concern for either country is foundationally fucking ridiculous. So if either country can hit each other from anywhere in the world in a matter of minutes, then the Monroe Doctrine's irrelevant. And clearly there's another objective of all this saber rattling. And I've speculated previously, as you may have heard, that it's to erode the borders of Eastern European countries to prime them for a merger of the European Union and Putin's Eurasian Union. I think that's coming. I think that's in the pipeline, because globalists aren't going to just settle for these super huge civilization states and political unions. Mm. They want to merge it all, baby. They want full globalism, full global government.
In the declaration of a guy called, what was his name? David Ben-Gurion. He was the first prime minister of Israel. And he said in 1960, he talked about the New World Order being centered in Jerusalem. They'll have a headquarters in Jerusalem, a world government. But he said at the same time that there would be a federated Eurasian Union. So he talked about basically a global system, but there would be this kind of USSR type entity, which seems to fit in with the idea of Eurasian unions. So they will basically allow this to exist alongside these other kind of globalist federated continent type situations. So I don't see this as something that contradicts that agenda. It's fully in line with it. And it's like, yeah, the idea that NATO never really gave a guarantee that they wouldn't expand. They gave some like vague verbal guarantees about this, but you know, nothing was ever written. And if that's the case, that none of these countries should be allowed to join NATO, then I guess Putin is saying that he gets to dictate the internal politics of those countries. You know, wouldn't this be equivalent to the U.S. saying that Venezuela and Cuba and Mexico can't be allies with China and Russia? Because doesn't Russia have, you know, warships that sometimes dock over there in Venezuela and Cuba? You know, it's like, it seems that there's a hypocrisy on both ends, right? It's like the U.S. doesn't want Russia to do that, but then Russia doesn't want the U.S. to have allies in Eastern Europe either. And it's like we're back to the Cold War scenario. We're back to two opposing poles in the world. Everybody has to choose a side. But it's bullshit, because even during the Cold War, you had the non-aligned movement, and you even had communist governments like Tito and Enver Hoxha in Albania and the Sino-Soviet split, who broke off from the Soviet alignment and went a third way. So it's totally possible. But of course, these Duganites and these alt-right types will say that it's not possible, because they're trying to gaslight you into this Eurasianist camp. This is Islamo anti-fascist Eurasianism, which is not much better than the, you know, the homosexualism and the Negro worship of the EU and Joe Biden. It's probably slightly less bad in terms of the social issues, but again, it's globalistic, it's anti-racial, it's anti-nationalist. Globalism, just from a different perspective and an Eastern perspective, and it tries to sell you like traditionalism to get you on board with this. Like, don't worry, you know, we will be racially mixing up all the different peoples, but like we're not going to have trannies and stuff, so it's actually better, and you should just sign up for it, man. It's the lesser of two evils, Glenn.
You hit upon something that I actually wanted to mention. So this argument that Ukrainian independence was conditioned on NATO not expanding, that the United States and NATO and the European Union and Russia all had the authority to condition Ukrainian independence on an agreement between third parties. I think it's kind of contrary to common sense. It would be like saying that, it would be like if America, right, the independence of America was conditioned on not expanding westward, that you can have your independence from England, but you've got to keep it to these original 13 colonies. And if you expand westward at all, then ownership of America reverts back to the United States. So I'm seeing people say that. They're also saying things like Ukraine never registered its borders with the United Nations, which is ridiculous. Ukraine is a founding member of the United Nations. The United Nations has passed multiple resolutions affirming Ukraine's borders, but they say this, they never registered their borders, you know, and so ownership of Ukraine reverts back to Russia because Russia is the legal successor of the USSR. And like, this is absolutely fucking ridiculous. They say that this is the justification that Putin has for taking Ukraine. What he's doing is really just a police action to repossess his rightful property. That's like, so his claim to this property is a property claim that communists had over it, communists who don't believe in private property rights. So we're tracing the chain of custody of property rights back to communists who don't believe in property rights. And again, totally ignoring the wishes of Ukrainian nationalists who already live there. You know what I mean? It's like I don't get what the argument is for cheering this on. It's not good for anybody.
It seems like it's just like this tactic that's used to justify Russian expansion. It's the same with that they're doing with this denazification thing or pointing at Nazism in all these countries. It's just like this excuse they're using to expand and to take over these countries, right? We're actually coming to denazify the country, so it's a benevolent imperialism. We're actually coming in to stop, you know, these NATO missiles from coming in, so it's a benevolent imperialism. It's a defensive, it's a preemptive imperialism. You know, it's like these Islamists who say, you know, like these Iranian Shiites, they want to like expand their influence into Iraq. It's like, we're coming into Iraq to, you know, stop the American aggressors from occupying. We're going to protect you. And it's how the third world sells its own imperialism. It's how Eurasianism sells itself as the benevolent imperialism.
Imperialism. Yeah, polypolar imperialism. It's like polytheism, but for government, you know, it's.
Right.
That's kind of transparent, right? Right. We can have globalism, but we don't have to sacrifice all of our little ethnic quirks that we have, which is to say they're going to amalgamate us slowly. They're going to boil the frog, because if you erase the political borders between all the countries, if you let anybody go anywhere, then you're going to lose the distinctions between ethnic groups. And even if you don't, you're going to have a lot of conflict. You're going to have a breakdown of society globally. And you're going to see shit like what we observe in books like Bowling Alone, but on a really exacerbated level, right? You're going to have not only distrust between groups, but distrust within ethnic groups as well. And I think people are just going to get really cynical. It's not going to be a good place to live if these tikkun olamists, as it were, get their way.
Yeah. And it's like, it's kind of a shit sandwich. That's what I've said many times. You have like these neocon Jews and based in the US and maybe the UK, who want to use white people to fight wars in the Middle East to help Israel become a superpower and sacrifice the Goyim for Jewish supremacy. But then on the other end, you have these Chabad Jews around Putin, and then you have the Duganites, you have the Eurasianists, who are not much better. You know, it's just like the other side of the coin. The other fucking, you know, multicultural LARP that sells itself as something different. It's actually good for you, Goyim. And like,
It looks so good though. It looks so good though. When you call it the Greater Israel Project, you tell them, oh, we're going to build a fucking network of superhighways and real estate development complexes from Israel to China. We call it the Greater Israel Project. People go, no, that's obviously the expansion of Zionism. That's Zionism run amok. We can't bomb these brown people. We can't, you know, form the civilizations or impact the civilizations of these brown people to this degree. But if you call it the Belt and Road Initiative, then they're all for it.
But you notice these people in the alt media, they cry and they mope about like bombings of brown people in the Middle East, but then as soon as white people start eating Russian bombs, they're giddy. They're out of their seats, clapping and cheering and whistling, and say, "Fantastic! We hate white people." They're aligned with the EU, or they're trying to get weapons from NATO, so they're bad white people, so we must kill them. Like, this is the narrative coming out of these Duganite alt writers: is white people are only good if they're aligned with like some non-Western, non-white country, effectively, or Russia, which they give an exception for some reason. So it's like they'll magically become good white people when they get conquered by Russia or China, right? This is what Dugan, I'm going to pull out a few more quotes from Dugan just to absolutely obliterate the idea that this is
good. Go ahead and read them. I'm gonna grab a refill of my coffee. It'll be like 30 seconds, but go ahead and read those. I'll be right back.
So this is what Dugan says. The West is the geographical Satan, geographical Antichrist. The West should pay for everything. It would be best to settle it with the Chinese, Tatars, Muslims, all this Eurasian nomadism. The West is dead land. He will revive only when he's settled by Cossacks, Tajiks, and Kazakhs. They will bring life with them. They will bring sense. So this is something he said quite a few years back, and it more or less outlines the agenda of this Eurasianism. It's the erasure of white people, the erasure of the white race and the West. And this is fundamental to Duganism and Eurasianism, is the erasure of the West. He hates the West. He always speaks about how the West is the fountain of evil and liberalism and the creator of all of this evil. He says here, I'm a supporter of blacks, white civilization, their cultural values, false dehumanizing model of the world built by them did not pay off. Everything goes to the beginning of the anti-white pogroms on a planetary scale. Russia's only saved by the fact that we're not pure white. Predatory multinational corporations, oppression, suppression of all others, MTV, gays, and lesbians. This is the fruit of white civilization from which it is necessary to get rid of. So I'm for reds, yellows, greens, blacks, but not for whites. He says white racism is a totally disgusting thing. It's Atlanticist, rooted in many geopolitical catastrophes. The notorious unity of the white race is as stupid as the concept of the united Christian world. This is the most harmful Atlanticist propaganda. Africans are Eurasians. And of course, Putin himself said that he sees Islam as closer to Russian Orthodox than Catholicism from the West. They view themselves as close to the Chinese. Dugin also advocated for androgyny in his book. He says he repudiates the gender binary. And he says, in the face of this construction of man as he who possesses reason, wealth, responsibility, city, white skin color, and so on, we revolt. This image of man must die. He doesn't have a chance to survive as he's closed inside modernity's historical deadlock. So he's against the not only white people, but against the idea of two genders. He also advocates for androgyny. He says, should we say that the fourth political theory may be addressed to the androgynous being and its gender is the androgyny? Perhaps. But only if it is possible not to project onto the androgynous the obviously split models of sex as halves of a whole. So he is for the androgynous man, the non-white aboriginal androgyny. So this is the future for the white race under Eurasianism, but it's better than George Soros's policies. So get on board, man.
Well, it's not that they're against global homo. They just don't want it to be just American government at the head of it. They don't want America to have an outsized influence, not because they have anything against the American elite, but because you have so much influence over your own system of government still, despite their best effort. And so they can't reliably trust that the American people won't recapture control of their own government and then use it to, you know, impact these global institutions in a way that would be counterproductive toward the achievement of global government. And so we got to shift everything over to Eurasia sooner rather than later so that we can alienate the members of each member country of this multipolar union from having impact, any impact whatsoever over the predetermined outcome. You know, and also the thing I wanted to say was the Eurasian Union's not even hypothetical. It's already been started. Putin started a Eurasian Economic Union, Armenia, Belarus, Kazakhstan, Kyrgyzstan, Russia are all members. And then they've got like people with observer status, countries with observer status, Cuba, Moldova, and Uzbekistan. So they've already started this. And I wouldn't be surprised to see them give it teeth to try to bring China in or to make BRICS. What is that? Brazil, Russia, India, China, South Africa. I wouldn't be surprised to see them merge these institutions try to merge them with the European Union.
The base Negro supremacist regime of South Africa, right?
Right. Well, Africans are Eurasians, they're Goy.
Yes, they are. And white people are to blame for all of the evils. White people are to blame for liberalism and globalism and everything. So it's actually
Magnus Hirschfeld. Magnus Hirschfeld was actually just a white dude. You know, Noel Ignatiev, this guy who says that he needed to end whiteness, really just a white guy.
And the Marxists are just white guys.
Yeah, just white people.
That's what he says.
Liberalism.
I know. That's what he said. I know. But that's why he's had to shift the blame from cultural Marxism to liberalism, because he can blame liberalism on white people, but he can't really blame cultural Marxism on white people. So he has to actually try to rehabilitate cultural Marxism. And he pretty much agrees with a lot of the cultural Marxist critiques. He's even said that. He says that those guys are his masters. He's praised Claude Levi-Strauss and Boas, those anthropologists that preached cultural relativism. He's praised these people because he views their ideas as good for this Eurasian project by demoralizing and deconstructing the West and weakening the West. That benefits him. So this idea that he's even against all of these pause degenerate things, well, he might be against it for his own country, but he's certainly not against it in our countries. He's just going to use it to point the finger at us and say, look, you're degenerate, so you must actually just put a gun to your own head and kill yourself and embrace Eurasia.
Well, if they got their way and we got this like globalistic pan-Eurasian government, it's not like the West wouldn't be part of it, right? That's the whole idea, is to have the West be governed by their pan-Eurasian government, their globalist government, rather than the current iteration of globalist government. So it's not like the West wouldn't be part of whatever political union they're hoping to forge. It's not even that they're necessarily anti-West. They're just anti-West for now, because they want to get people to distrust their own institutions. They use this Marxian strategy of turning everybody against everybody, causing all this instability so that they can bring about the total state. And that's why they promote this degeneracy, because it destroys the man's role in society. It makes women not dependent on men. It makes them LARP as men. It makes people androgynous. It confuses gender roles, and it promotes all around chaos, right? It's the practical application of chaos theory. And it's exactly what we would expect from someone who wanted to destroy our society, but not necessarily get rid of its resources. So they, they don't want to wipe us off the map. They just want to bring us into their political union.
Yeah, he wants to turn white people into Eurasian mongrels. That's what he said, right? He
says 56 percenters.
Yeah, he says, import the Chinese, Tatars, Muslims, and Eurasian nomads. The West will only be brought to life again when it's settled by Cossacks, Tajiks, and Kazakhs. And so that is ultimately the goal. And Putin embraces that goal. He's embraced it for Russia. He is embracing it for Eastern Europe, as he wants to bring these Chechen, fucking subhumans, to using them as a military army to put down Ukrainians. And then, of course, like, it's such a polarizing thing, because then you have on the other end all these like leftists and shit supporting Ukraine, which causes all of these kind of conservatard Trumptards to jump on board the Putin worship shit. And it's a very clever,
it's disorienting. False dichotomy. It's disorienting, and it makes war it creates an environment that's really ripe for war propaganda. I've never seen it so ass backwards. It's extremely hard to tell who's Jewing who here, and it's by design, because let's face it, there's Jews on all sides. Pull up the Wikipedia article for the Ukraine versus Russia conflict, and it's like belligerents, Ukraine, Russia, supported by Israel. That's for Ukraine, and then for Russia, it's supported by Israel, and it's like, oh, okay. So, both of these countries have actually entertained the go ahead.
Zelensky is like the twerking degenerate Jew. And then, Putin, this kind of gives credence to Putin. Putin's going to come and save Ukraine from the twerking degenerate Jew. But actually, his stated goal is to destroy the Nazis and the actual Ukrainian nationalists. And that's exactly what he's doing. And probably what he'll do is install some other Jew into power that's just a pro-Russian one. Yeah.
So either way, you've got Ukraine joining some civilization state or some larger body politic. Either they become part of the European Union, and they're not like a conditional member like Hungary, where they get to use their own currency and dictate their own immigration policy. They're like a full member with their butthole wide open, where they have no choice but to accept whatever migrants are forced on them, whatever conditions are imposed on them. In addition to receiving this military help, right? So I don't know. It's either they join the EU or they become part of Russia. Again, heads, globalists win, tails, nationalists lose. Anybody who wants Ukraine to have its own sovereign borders and not be sucking the dick of some larger globalist government, I mean, they're shit out of luck, dude. That's what
They were in a better position than most white countries. And so far as they were not in the EU, they were not in NATO, and they were not beholden to Russia either. But the two sides have tried to do this tug of war shit. And now it's all come to a head, right? And now it's fuck. Now it's a meat grinder. And now everybody's taken a side. And it's like, if these Western America, like these American and Western based people, like they can only see the hypocrisy in the Western media and Western politicians, like it's like the Paul Watson methodologies is like point out the hypocrisy of some left liberal type on Twitter, right? But then it's like, yeah, you're not seeing the hypocrisy that comes out of the other side of it too, or any of the stuff that comes out of the other side, because you're so focused on this one thing, your own government or your own media. But it's like both sides are Jewing each other, and there has to be a third way to come out of all of this, but we're not seeing it. We're just seeing these people bandwagoning and using it as a fantasy football fucking LARP to push their own agendas domestically, right?
Accepting premises that would invalidate their own claim to defending their own borders, right? Well, they can't put NATO bases so close to Russia. That's the impetus for the attack. It's like, well, fucking by that argument, having military bases in Texas means the United States can't defend itself from Mexico. Some people would push back and say, well, that's not an apt comparison. A better metaphor would be if China had military bases in Mexico and they were invading the United States. And it's like, dude, fucking Mexicans are basically Chinese proxy soldiers at this point with how much fucking fentanyl they bring into the country. So it's not like it's a apples to oranges comparison at all. If putting a military base on your border, regardless of, you know, who runs it, the Ukrainians would ask Americans to put one there if they join NATO, right? If putting a military base on your border invalidates your right to defend that border, then nobody has the right to defend borders. And if you accept that premise, then you're a fucking retard.
Well, it doesn't make too much sense, because like now that he's taken over Ukraine, he is next to NATO. So now couldn't he just say again, well, your missiles are next to my border, so actually Romania should rescind its membership of NATO and be used as a quarantine zone or a fucking like a buffer zone. He can just use this argument ad infinitum to just rescind every country's membership in NATO, right?
Anybody could invalidate anybody else's property rights based on that argument. I know my neighbor's got guns, therefore I'm justified in taking over his house. Like it's not a scalable argument. It makes no sense in principle or in practice. And it's just something people say because they've got a geopolitical axe to grind that apparently takes primacy over their concern for any of the people who are caught up in this meat grinder.
Well, ultimately they advocate for the abolition of NATO. I've seen them. I posted a thing of,
in favor of something larger than NATO, right? They want like a world army.
Well, some of them might, but some of these people are just want to get NATO out of the way so that Russia and China can then move in and do their little dance. So they really just want to replace NATO and the U.S. hegemony with Russia and Chinese hegemony on the basis that it will be more favorable to these poo face Muslims. And I've seen Evo Morales and Maduro and these Iranians say this and promote this and push this in their media, and all of the lefties in the West, the anti-wars, and even the libertarians like Ron Paul say the same stuff, and they're on RT saying the same shit, is that they're so angry with like Western Europe and US doing these wars over the past 15 years. And you and I would agree that these wars are bullshit, mainly for Zionist interests, but they're using this as an excuse to justify the other side's imperialism, which is
ultimately, it's not that they want to get rid of like globalist occupational government. They just want to change the face of it. You know, they don't want a white face on it anymore. They want a Chinese and a Russian face on it, I guess.
They want a brown or Eurasian face on it, right?
Exactly. So it's not a change of course, really, by any means. They talk about attacking globalism. It's a bait and switch. They're taking away what they've called globalism, and they're giving you something that's like globalism to the 10th degree. You know, it's going to make what they have planned for a pan-Eurasianist government, like what they have planned for a globalist government, would make like the last 100 years of American-centric hegemony, it would make it look like fucking ultra-nationalism by comparison. I really do think that, because going forward, they're going to make it so that you can't meaningfully resist anything this giant political union wants to do. You're going to have to implement the digital IDs. You're going to have the digital currency. And if anybody dissents, if anybody has a problem with it, if they suspect that anybody's even thinking critically about it, it'll get to that point. They'll cut them off from their fucking bank accounts. You'll get totally ostracized and alienated and cut off from society and punished and made an example of. People will be forced to go along with it. And so that's why it's, I think, critical now that people kind of become aware of what this Agenda 21 Great Reset thing is, because it's not just a conspiracy theory that the Q-tards and the boomers talk about. It's something that these globalists openly brag about, and it's something that transcends American hegemony. You know, America is not the only base of operation for these fucking globalists. China is what it is because of, you know, American globalists, Jews like Henry Kissinger. There's a lot of people like that that have been playing both sides all along, orchestrating these conflicts so that they can benefit. And they use us as the pawns. They throw us in the meat grinders, and it's going to continue to happen until we get fucking wise to it.
Yeah, it's like these Western governments, their number one target is to undermine white people, undermine the white race, undermine us domestically, demoralize us, dehumanize children, and expose them to degeneracy and all this bullshit. And what I see from these like anti-imperialist leftist shit is zero analysis of that, and really just attempting to scapegoat the white race and the West. You notice they use these terms, the West did it, the West did this and that, as if it's like some unitary block, as if everybody agrees with each other, as if there's no dissenting voices.
They don't even draw
the
line definitively, right? They don't even draw the line definitively on what constitutes the West. It's an ever-shifting line. They want to move the line. They could subjectively redefine it as long as they're expanding Russia's political territory, right? So it's the West, as long as you're a member of NATO or the European Union, everything else is the East. If Ukraine was to become part of Russia, it would no longer be the West. It would be the East, right? This is right. All subjective in their mind.
Yeah, it's like this Berlin Wall mentality. And secondly, these leftists are full of shit, because what they do is they lie to you and they analyze it incorrectly, because they say the West is doing neo-colonialism. And they frame it all in terms of this critical race theory stuff and say these campaigns of militarism in the Middle East and in the brown world, this is all white racists exploiting the brown third world. This is all the West doing neo-colonialism 2.0. And it's a bit different than the old colonialism, but it's still white supremacy. And even Israel, they frame it as a white thing. They say white nations created Israel, and Ashkenazi Jews are white anyway, and they're white supremacists. So really, this is an attempt by the Duganites and the leftists and these anti-imperialist phonies to scapegoat the white race for what is ultimately these Judeo-globalists. And
they were doing that whole side with Palestine thing, you saw a lot of that, right, on Twitter especially. They weren't holding Jews responsible for the subjugation of Palestinians. They were saying, oh, this started with the British Mandate State before Israel was even formed. Right. And so this is the responsibility of white people. This is yet another manifestation of white supremacy subjugating non-white peoples. And so white people had to take the blame for everything that happened to Muslims in Israel, since Jews have been there by virtue of the fact that there was originally a British Mandate State there that was then handed over to the Jewish people following World War II. And so, you know, we're fucked either way. We get blamed for everything. Either way.
Yeah, right? It's like you look at these wars, you know, war in Iraq, Zionism, right? Jewish neocons and lobbies, you know, the war in Libya, Bernard Henri Levy, Jew, says he's doing it to help Israel, right? You have war in Afghanistan and 9/11, all kinds of Zionist Jewish connections to that. This is a hijacking of our governments to pursue the narrow ethnic interest of this group. And there's collaborators and profiteers and so on and corrupt people that are not Jewish that get in on it. Of course there are. But then why see these people come in at the end of it and actually obscure that whole thing and just blame it on this generic entity called the West, or blame it on this generic entity called America, and scapegoat this, just like they do this blame the generic entity called capitalism or liberalism, you notice it just becomes more and more vague as they go on, so that what they can really do is justify the wholesale annihilation and slaughter of white people. That's what it seems what they're trying to pull up here.
All while proposing more of what caused the problems we currently face as the solution to those problems. Right? It's always somebody else's fault. It's never their own fault. It's never their own poor leadership, their own poor decision-making. It's not any shortcoming on their part. It's the corruption of white supremacists and liberals and capitalists and Nazis and all of these boogeymen and nebulous amalgamations that you can't ever quite put your finger on, but which sound really scary, like something has to be done about them. And so they create these pretenses to do even more of what is fucked things up so far, and it's taking us down a pretty crazy road, man. If it continues, then it's gonna get biblical. You know, I hate to say it, but like, these people have the capability to destroy the entire planet. They're dead set on creating a global government with a central monopoly on resource allocation that doesn't depend on feedback from people at all. It doesn't depend on markets at all. No price mechanism. They want to try to recreate the Soviet Union on a global scale. Not just Putin, but all these fucking ideological communists, regardless of whether they're Jewish, Chinese, or otherwise. And it's going to end in catastrophe. It's going to end in mass starvation and genocide. There's no way it won't.
Yeah, and all these factions that I see are scapegoating the West and white people for everything, and that is being picked up by these Duganites, who'll pretend they're on your side. They'll pretend they're your friend. They'll pretend they're actually white nationalists, and you know, they just happen to love white on white bloodshed when it's done by Eurasianists. They just happen to align perfectly with this side on every issue, but it's all irony. It's all irony, bro. You know, it's all a joke. This guy, you know, Dugan has no influence. You're just seeing things. You're a schizo. You know, this is the fucking LARP. This is the cop out every time.
And if you agree with Jared Howe, Brandon Martinez on any of this stuff, if you're seeing things a different way, then you're really supporting George Soros and Pornhub and right, all of these other degenerate companies that have come out against Ukraine, because, you know, I don't know, it couldn't just be that 90% of people think that this is a really unpopular thing and everybody and their mom's trying to fucking milk it. But, you know, the fact that we coincidentally end up on the same side as some of these degenerates, that's taken to be that our entire argument's invalid and irrelevant, as though things couldn't possibly be intentionally confusing. Like, they're not trying to intentionally confuse you in the media, these people who are consciously aware of the fact that you don't like what they have to say.
It's not even the same side as these degenerates, because we're taking a third position, which is that the good people in Ukraine are the nationalists. We're not for Zelensky. I've criticized that guy. I think he probably was responsible for some of this by instigating, but
I didn't even know about the twerking thing either. My wife showed me a video that she's like, check this shit out. What a faggot. You know, I'm like, yeah, I don't disagree, man.
It's almost like they put the worst fucking twerking Jew in power in Ukraine just to kind of give Putin more credibility to invade and get these right wingers to support it. Right. And then to dismiss the white nationalists in Ukraine, like Azov, is somehow like irrelevant or something. But it's not black and white, because like, the George Soros supports fucking Palestine and funds anti-Zionist groups, but that doesn't stop these alt-right gimps from supporting Palestine. They're on the same side as Soros on that issue. And then at the same time, they were on the same side as Biden when it came to pulling out of Afghanistan, and they're probably on the same side as Biden on a number of fucking issues. I saw Biden pass some laws doing all kinds of regulations, which these people love, in the economy, right? So it's like, every politician, you can find any politician or person in the world and you'll have like one view that's similar or something, but that does not mean you support like the motives behind that person doing that, or even what they're advocating in that situation, right?
So let me ask you a question about this. A lot of people have been commenting, remarking about how Richard Spencer, a notorious Duganite, has, I guess, come out in favor of Ukraine, which is surprising. You would think that he would reflexively and unconditionally support Russia, but maybe that's too mask off. I thought he was beyond that, but do you have thoughts about taking a position in favor of Ukraine? Is it that he is in favor of them joining the European Union, which he's previously expressed like a like an ideological support for, like this pan-European political union idea? He likes the idea of erasing the borders between European countries. And so do you think that's the impetus here, or what do you make of it?
That's weird as hell, because he was the fountainhead of all of this Duganite stuff from the beginning, right? He was the biggest promoter of it. He was him and Arctos Media, and his wife was a Russian who translated Dugan's books, and he was constantly praising him and doing interviews with him. And he filtered a lot of this bullshit out into the alt-right, which is still there, right? Him and Heinbeck and like TRS, they've all absorbed all that fucking Duganite shit. And they're still hardcore shilling that side. In fact, they're the loudest, most jovial proponents of this Eurasianist ideology and agenda, although they try to mask and pretend it's not what they're doing. But then Spencer's completely flipped his script now. I don't know if he's just trying to be contrarian again, like he always does, but he usually would just shill Putin no matter what, right? I mean, he even split with that guy called that Iranian guy. I forget what was his fucking name. This Iranian guy that was part of his little group, and he split with that guy over this idea that that guy was pro-Ukraine or something, right? So it's like, it's very weird shit. He's probably just doing this like pro-EU LARP or something, right?
Yeah, it's irony, bro. It's just irony, you know. Or it could be an indication that Duganites are playing both sides of this, that, you know, this pan-Eurasianism transcends the conflict and they're happy with either side winning. They do a lot of bluster about, oh, NATO's on my border. But then you examine that excuse, it doesn't make sense. Clearly, that's not why they're concerned. So something bigger is going on here. They've got to have an agenda that's not explicitly stated. You know, they're probably not playing their hand entirely. And so it could just be a healthy dose of chaos theory, right? To throw people off the scent. That's part of Duganist strategy as well. We will join every side and not let them divide us. So even if they weren't on the Ukrainian side to begin with, they're going to put them, you know, they're going to put representatives of their ideology on that side, because that's part of their fucking, that's part of their right. agenda. That's part of their strategy. I don't know.
Yeah. They're Dugan's first wife. It said here, Dugan's first wife, Evgenia Debranyanskaya. She was a prominent feminist and LGBT activist in Russia. And it says, this article gives a quote, says, this is not in Gessen's book. Shortly before they parted ways, the young couple made a pact. Sasha, darling, I will fight openly for the rights of women and gay people. Your task is far more difficult. You must pretend to be ultra-nationalist until the time is right. Then when we reveal to them the joy of androgyny and sex as practiced by the angels. Yeah, that seems to be the case. It's this Duganite chaos.
Where was this from? Sorry, where was this from again?
This is from an article called... says, is Alexander Dugan an undercover queer theorist?
Oh man, I'm never surprised by this, but every time I hear something to that effect, it's just holy cow. Even though I'm not surprised, it's still like, well, I don't know how to explain it. It's as bad as you would think it would be, right? And you said not just you.
He's gonna save you from the game.
A lot of people reported on the fact that Dugan was friends with the founder of the Neo-Bolshevik Party, right? Wasn't that guy an faggot. Open faggot? Like,
yeah.
And so I forget his name, but yeah. So I don't know. He has a lot of connections Liminoff. To these types of people. Yeah. So I don't know. He's a based ethno-nationalist, yet he's the source of these talking points that ethno-nationalism is caveman nationalism. He surrounds himself with all these fags, these bisexual people that are engaging in orgies, including his own wife, who's...
You notice that the alt-right, they always try to sell it to you as like liberation from gay pride marches. Like I see that this is their their propaganda every time is like, Russia will liberate you with their tanks from the homo marches and the drag queens, and any opposition to Russia is an affirmation of drag queens and homo marches, right? This is how they sell their imperialism to you. It's like, we will save you and lead you to this like Christian holy civilization, right? We're the new Rome.
That's a very extremely online strategy, isn't it? If you disagree with me, you're gay.
Yeah, that's how they operate. That's literally how they operate.
Yeah.
It's like, you either accept my jackboot down your throat and my like Chechen rape hordes down your throat, or you're a homosexual. Like, this is how it works. This is how they create the false dichotomy, right?
Let me surrender my entire society to your agenda here. I wouldn't want to be called a fag.
It's like, yeah, they either call each other fags or Jews, right? Like, you're a Jew. No, you're a Jew. Or then at the top end of it, you're a Nazi. You're a Nazi, right? This is like the very dumbed down discourse.
Or the flip side, you're a racist libertarian, or you're a racist liberal. It's always bring things down to the level of some classification that can be used as a pejorative. There's supposed to be some obvious negative connotation associated with the classification, and then they just casually dismiss it. When leftists do it by calling you a Nazi, it's the same thing as when these Duganites do it by calling you a racist liberal or a racist libertarian. It's just a method by which to avoid having to address any of the issues at hand. It's a deflection technique.
Yeah, it's just if they're calling you that, it's most likely that they're a racist communist, or not even, or just a communist pretending to be a racist to make you into a communist.
And Nats Bull is almost kind of a misnomer too, because they're not nationalist Bolsheviks; they're all globalists, even when they are Nats Bulls.
Yeah, they're Eurasianists. They love this fucking LARP over there. They love this Duganism, this Eurasianism.
They love
China. They want this Eurasian man. They want this clergy man. They're just trying to sell it to you by picking up talking points of like opposing gays and opposing Jews, and then selling you this very fucking dumb solution to our problems. Right.
Well, they say that's conspiratorial, right? You're going too far. What you think that it's a broad ranging conspiracy? You see Duganists in the shadows. You see Duganists under your bed. It's like, well, do you think this is really an unprecedented? This would be an unprecedented strategy. I think this hasn't happened before. It's not like the neoconservatives didn't, you know, the Trotskyites, United States, under the guise of being neoconservatives. It's not like the Sabbateans and the Frankists didn't march through the Catholic Church. You know what I mean? Right. So this has got a lot of precedent. It's not like they didn't march through the Masonic temples. They've done this before in the past. This is the same strategy they've been using time and time again. It's probably the reason why they've been kicked out of so many fucking countries, right?
It's not like they ever pay off journalists to promote agendas, right?
Oh, that never happens.
Or activists. It's not like there's a history of intelligence agencies funding organizations and dissident groups to say certain things that align with certain agendas.
It's not like they pay Mossad agents to get people to fuck kids on camera, tape it, and then blackmail them with the footage. You know, they don't do stuff like
now,
that.
Now, Russia
is the conspiracy theory.
Russia and China, Xi Jinping and Putin, dude, they're going to expose the Epstein tapes, man. They're going into Ukraine just to dig up the dirt on Biden. They're going to expose it. They're going to bomb the U.S. bioweapons labs and expose the COVID agenda, even though they're in on the COVID agenda. You know, this is all, you know, it all makes perfect sense in the QAnon fantasy land, man. Come on.
Oh, yeah. Well, hypothetically speaking, let's say there are biolabs in Ukraine, and let's say they did have something to do with the spread of COVID. If that is true, they're not going to get preserved by virtue of the fact that Russia went in there. That's not going to be the consequence of this. What's going to happen is all of that evidence is going to get destroyed and lost forever. Garam fucking teed.
Well, you notice,
there's no two ways around that.
You notice that like these types that push the Putin and Xi saviorism is these are the same people that totally downplayed COVID. They totally downplayed the agenda. They totally said, it's not real. It's not a conspiracy. There's nothing to it. It's just a real virus. Then they overreacted to it. And there's no digital ID. And there's no, the WEF is LARPing. And Bill Gates is just a joke. And they downplayed that whole thing because it didn't fit with their savior narrative, which is that Xi and Putin are going to save the West and the white race from the Zionists or from the Sorosites. And because they were fully on board with it. China was fully in bed and on board with all that Fauci, Bill Gates stuff. And so had to just take that out of the equation, torpedo that narrative. And then now they're jumping on to the Putin war agenda now, right?
Well, China's almost like cast as a neutral party in all this too. The Putin war agenda, like, oh well, they're uniquely positioned to negotiate between the East and the West because they've got a foot in both worlds, just like Israel, right? They're uniquely positioned here. But I think it was funny, and I'm interested to see what the reaction is going to be. But Tucker Carlson last night was blaming China for the conflict in Ukraine, saying that they emboldened Putin to invade. They created all kinds of instability in the region, all this stuff.
Oh, right.
And I don't think I've ever heard anybody blame China for that yet on TV. So I imagine that the Dugantards are going to be beside themselves. And even some of the mainstream Democrats are probably going to be counter signaling that. It should be a pretty interesting set
That's
of reactions.
Fucking hilarious.
So I'm looking forward to that.
Because the Dugantards and the alt-right gimps, they're China simps, right? They're China Sinophiles.
Oh, yeah.
And so they liked that Tucker simps for Putin, but they don't like that he doesn't simp for China. It's the same shit with Bannon. He simps for Putin, but he hates China and wants to align with Russia against China. That seems to be the narrative coming out of Bannon and Tucker, is like, we need to align with Russia against China, right?
They get all excited. They get all excited that Darren Beattie, self-described proud Jew, Darren Beattie has got kind of like a in with Tucker Carlson. He's on his show all the time. And Beattie's got like this obviously pro-Putin, pro-Russia Duganite bent. You look at the headlines on Revolver News, it's pretty much always obvious. And people get, you know, the people on that side get excited about the fact that Beattie's got this inroad. They've got Pedro Gonzalez on there all the time, this fucking loser. But both of them push these Duganite perspectives, and Tucker lets him speak, but he does kind of push back against them a little bit. And I think he's taken the positions that this war isn't good for the average Ukrainian, that he's not necessarily for the expansion of NATO or Russia annexing the territory, but rather, you know, basically the same thing we're saying. Why can't Ukraine just be its own country? The war's bad. You can condemn the war without, you know, necessarily endorsing everything the Ukrainian government's ever done. And he too wonders why there's no nuance. And then he goes on to blame China for their role in it, which I don't think anybody on TV has done. And again, I think is going to cause some fucking
people,
waves.
These people, like in the dissident right, in the alt media, they act like what they're doing is just trying to delegitimize, you know, the EU or delegitimize the U.S. government or Biden. But how are they doing that? I mean, it's not Biden dropping bombs. He's not delegitimized by this war. He looks like a peacenik pulling out of Afghanistan. Now he's not getting involved in Russia. He looks like he's the peacemaker and Putin is the one who is dropping the bombs, and they're delegitimizing themselves because these are people who have claimed to be anti-war and anti-imperialist and anti-neocon and anti-intervention and pro-nationalism. But then at the same time, now they're justifying a Russian imperium, right, on these grounds. So it's like the only credibility being torpedoed here is these fucking people who have shown themselves to be two-faced.
On the flip side of it, I don't know, I try to caution normies against some of the takes they take on it and some of the motives they ascribe to Putin and stuff. They say, well, Biden's inaction is a result of him just being weak and inept. And it's like, well, no, he could have other motives for letting this continue without directly intervening in it. Like we mentioned, there could be evidence of his corruption getting destroyed as a result of this. It's not like the Democrats haven't ever worked with the Russians in the past. So, you know,
yeah, that's an interesting point.
But so there's also Israel's not doing anything about this either. And both sides are calling Israel like a potential neutral arbiter that can negotiate peace terms. And so it's not just that Biden's weak or inept. If that's the case, then Israel is too. And you can't have it both ways. Either Zog is a murderous, tyrannical, authoritarian expansionist power, or it's this neutered, fangless thing that can't do anything about anything. You can't have it both ways, right?
You notice how kind of delusional the critiques are. It's like you have some of these people being like, Biden's a weak, old mental patient who, you know, craps his own pants and he's inept and he's not doing enough to stop Putin. But then you have these other people who are saying, we support Putin's war and we don't actually want Biden to do anything against it. So it doesn't really, and those are like two different narratives coming out of the conservatard right in America.
Simultaneously. Yeah. And I would kind of caution conservatives to, against taking that stance, because it's, you know, Biden is inept, but he's not the one making decisions. So if he's not acting on this, it's because someone's telling him not to act on this. Israel's also not acting on this. And it's not just because they're not inept and they don't have an interest in the situation. They're letting it happen on purpose. And I don't think it has anything to do with the stated geopolitical analysis, which is like pre-Cold War shit that's totally dependent on like physical proximity between countries. Again, the United States of America and Russia are long past the point of needing to be right next to each other to get a fucking warhead on one of the other's doorstep. If Russia wants to bomb the United States, it's going to happen within minutes. If the United States wants to bomb Russia, it's going to happen within minutes. And most likely the warhead's not going to come from a land source. So the whole analysis is moot. And I think there's clearly another objective at play here, and it's the erosion of European borders. We're also moving toward like a financial crisis and global inflation.
Yeah.
And a global depression. So that's probably also part of it as well.
Yeah. The assumption is that there's nothing else going on behind this, that these people are independent actors. And, you know, there's so much confusion going on here. But I guess the last thing we'll end on here, this is like the New World Order caste system. This was on Thule-Tide's website. So at the top, you got Jews, trans Jews, gay Jews, Jewish women, Jewish men. Then you got transgender, trans blacks, POCs, and trans whites. Then you got gay non-white, gay blacks, gay POCs, gay North Asians. Then you got straight non-white, straight blacks, straight POCs. And then you got white, gay whites, straight white women. And then white, straight white men are on that absolute bottom rung. This is the oppression hierarchy Olympics right here. And that makes sense, right? That seems to be what our rulers tell us is the oppression hierarchy.
The intersectional stack, as it were. Yeah. There might be some exceptions made. I mean, sometimes it can change in real time, depending on who's got more power and influence. They say that the white supremacy stuff, that the intersectional oppression stuff is based on power plus privilege, but you'll notice that there's a nice carve out for Jewish people who are tactically white in one moment and tactically non-white in the next. And that's probably why they're at the top of that pyramid there.
Or when Jews do bad things, the leftists make them into whites so they can blame whites, right? The neocons are just a bunch of white people. Those like Zionist neocons are just white guys, you know?
Ben Shapiro. It was just an evil conservative white guy who's heartless right. toward poor people and just wants them to starve. He hates the homeless. He hates brown people. He's just one of these evil white supremacists.
Yeah, exactly. What a perfect fucking scenario, these people. They got it all figured out, don't they?
I guess they do.
White
play
people
both
take
sides
the blame.
Of it and scapegoat whites. Yeah, you see it everywhere. They do it on the individual level, but then they do it on the global level too. It's not the failure of communism or Marxism, which is really just secular Judaism. It's a secular form of tikkun olam. It's not the failure of Marxism that's caused all these global problems. It's the failure of liberalism and capitalism and Atlanticism and Americanism. Yeah. And so what we need to do is just have more central planning at the global level to undo all the damage caused by this Atlanticist, capitalist, American globalist order.
Yeah, there's no evil outside of that. And, you know, of course, they just conflate the average citizen with the elite, the average citizen with Soros, the average citizen with Bezos, the average, you know, business owner with Gates. It's just an attempt to scapegoat the entirety of the nation, the entirety of the race for what these internationalists, rootless cosmopolitans do, who have no concern for our race, in fact, hate our race, or our race is the one that's under attack. And so none of these people have our back. None of these brown fucking Muslims, none of these lefty anti-imperialists, even these anti-neocons or these anti-fucking Zionists, even these people are part of the agenda, which is to torpedo the white race, torpedo the West, make us prostrate, get us in fetal position. That's what they want. They want us weak and divided and, able to be just raped and taken advantage of. They can invade us through immigration. They can invade us militarily. That's why they want us, looking in at ourselves and only blaming ourselves for everything. It's like, we can look at our own faults, but at some point we have to have a mindset where we're able to fix things. We're able to pursue a positive agenda. If you're always just sulking and in your own fucking moping in your own tears, like, how are you ever going to fix anything? You might as well just jump off a bridge and hating
your own country too. How are you going to fix your country if you're just buying into this conditioning that's telling you to hate it, that your country is responsible for everything? These people don't give us the benefit of the doubt. You know, they don't see us as victims for being occupied by this globalist government, for having things like the UN and NATO imposed on us. If we go by their arguments, our borders are invalid by virtue of the fact that we're even part of NATO. They want the same thing for us that's currently happening to Ukraine. It's not a question of whether or not we're going to be independent. For them, it's a question of which globalist entity are we going to be subservient to. And they're celebrating and trying to accelerate the demise of globalism 1.0 and the current iteration of globalism. And it's not to replace it with some nationalistic order where countries negotiate terms between themselves on an individual basis. They're trying to bring about an even more broad iteration of globalism that would have even less control for people at the local level, which is the opposite, I think, of what any nationalist would want.
100%. It has to be about localism, your own community. That's where it starts. This geopolitical horse betting on, you know, equally corrupt players is not going to save you. This is QAnon. Hmm. This is QAnon tier LARP. And this is basically the people buying into this have nothing to live for because they're sitting on the internet all day doing jack shit. And they can't even take care of their own backyard, let alone the global fucking, you know, the global order and move the chess pieces.
Yeah, they're extremely online to the point that they brag about kids their friends have. I see people criticizing you and me, like, what have you guys ever done? You know, because we're criticizing the online, right? And it's, what do you mean? Me personally, it's like, I've started a family. I have kids. I try to improve myself. I try to improve my community, get people engaged locally. It's like these people, they're saying, what have you ever done? We on the online right have facilitated the creation of families. We have guys in our circles that have had kids. It's like, so you're getting online and you're bragging about kids that other dudes have had. And that's your argument for why we shouldn't criticize this Duganite Eurasianist bullshit that results in white on white warfare. It's like, it's not even, it doesn't even stand even the most basic scrutiny. I can't believe anybody falls for it.
Yeah, but it's good that some people aren't. I mean, a lot of people are seeing our side of this and not falling into the false dichotomy, right? And it really is on our shoulders at this point, because so many of these gimps online are falling for it, are still pushing the same shit that we've been seeing for the past 4 or 5 years. It hasn't changed it, not one bit, man. It's really the same stuff.
A little more chaos theory now, people switching sides. Spencer goes mask on, mask off, mask on, mask off. They try to pretend like there's beefs between guys like Fuentes and Richard Spencer. They set up all these fake dichotomies, and at the end of the day, there's not really much breathing room on how they feel about Russia and China and about the Atlanticist liberal order. It's like this whole online dissident sphere is, yeah, despite all of their differences on other issues, they're united in this preference for America to fall, for the United States government to completely fall, not just be taken over by people who actually care about the United States, but for it to be erased completely and replaced with I guess, Chinese or Russian rule over us. That would be better from their perspective because their Bitcoin account got shut down by the FBI. Yeah. Like, I don't know what the argument is.
Well, if that's what they believe, then fine. Like, I wouldn't even really counter-signal the idea that national politics may be out of the cards at this point. But if that's what you're saying, then what you should be doing is doing localism, doing a local solution. And that's not what they're doing, though. They still seem to be LARPing around, pretending like they're going to take over the GOP and take over the government to get the donations. But then at the same time are blackpilling people and saying there's no hope, it's dead. The West is a degenerate, decadent, decayed place, and it's all hollowed out. We might as well just throw our lot in with the fucking Chinks, you know? So it's like,
well, the ironic thing too is if you're ever going to have any hope of like impacting policy at the national scale, like with the RNC, getting people into the federal government who are our guys, so to speak, it's actually going to start with localism because of the way that power is delegated within the Republican Party structure. It starts at the local levels. You have, you know, local and state conventions before you even get to the point where you're having caucuses at the national level. And everybody who participates at the national level is chosen at the local level. So if you ever want to have like an impact at the national level, you need an approach that's entirely focused on the local level. You need to get delegates in place. You really need to become a precinct officer, even if you have no hopes of having success at the national level at all. Becoming a precinct officer gives you the ability to appoint people within your own community to not only staff the Republican Party, but also like get no contest positions within the government. The barriers to entry in most rural communities for participation in government, extremely fucking low. You'll almost always run uncontested because nobody wants to even get involved. And it's because of these low barriers that neocons on the, you know, fake right wing neocons on the Republican side and Bolsheviks on the Democrat side have been able to just fucking strong arm American politics for so long. It's kind of a self-fulfilling prophecy. They demoralize people into not participating and to make it so easy to make it easier for themselves to subvert our politics at the local level, thereby subverting them at the national level as well. Sorry, well, go ahead.
These people, they should be doing something. If they're not doing that, then they should be working towards some kind of secessionist cause. And I've seen some people do that, like Ozarkia, they're forming like this white community over there and white ingathering over there, and that's much more positive than just sitting around sulking on the internet and cheerleading for a bunch of foreign countries that have no interest in helping you or your fucking family and probably right. want to just drop a bomb on your head anyways. Like, do something right. productive, for fuck's sakes, right?
And as bad as the petrodollar is and as high as the costs have been for trying to prop it up all these decades, like an overnight end to it, replacing it with some Eurasian alternative, some new world reserve currency, it's not going to benefit us like a return to a free market and money would. You know, just shifting to some other fiat communist central bank that issues currency isn't going to benefit us. And so I don't know. People, you know, there's things you can do at the local level. There's things you can do in your own personal life to make progress toward meaningfully resisting this agenda. But as you said, sulking on the internet's not going to fucking do it. They're not going to get Putin or Xi Jinping coming in, taking out Biden or anybody else you view as oppressive and liberating you in the name of ethnocentrism and white ethno-nationalism. It's just not going to fucking happen. They don't care about you. They don't like you. They hate you just as much as Marxist Antifas hate you. You know, they're ideologically aligned in that regard.
Yeah, they want to use what they can to beat you down because they want the power. They don't want you to have the power. All right, man, I appreciate you coming on again. Great talk. I guess we'll speak again next week. A lot to go over, man. Fucking World War III.
I know it. Until next time, man.
All right, man. Later.